Hello and welcome back to the There Is a Floodlight That Never Goes Out podcast. As always, I am joined by Ed. How are you, Ed?
I'm good, thank you.
And I think it's fair to say we're recording on what is probably a momentous day for football, a day that will go down in the history books. You know, we're going to discuss whether it'll go down as a good event or a bad event in the history books. But yeah, we're going to be talking, of course, about the European Super League, or at least the plans that have been announced by 12 European clubs to create a European Super League today on Sunday, the 18th of April. Ed, let's firstly start off with probably the big question, and you know it's going to get a Noel Gallagher-esque answer. It's a big question. It deserves a big answer, but... is it a good idea to form a breakaway league from the Champions League, and what might eventually lead to domestic leagues in the first place?
Yeah, I think you've got to look at it from two perspectives. You've got to look at it from the perspective of the club joining and the perspective of other clubs. And my personal opinion is that if, you know, the Big Six, and I'm sure touching it later, what constitutes the Big Six, but if they want to leave the English football pyramid, let them leave. And from their perspective, it comes down to, I think Martin Tyler said it on Sky earlier. He said it comes down to the two G's, guarantee and greed. And for me, greed is the main one there. And
100%.
So for them as a club, of course, it benefits the Big Six. As a fan base of a Big Six fan, though, you know, if I was your average fan, I would not be, and people aren't accepting it. And I'm sure we'll see massive repercussions from fan bases of the respective clubs. I think it's a plan that's forged a lot in retaliation. Obviously, tomorrow there are plans for UEFA to announce their reforms to the Champions League. And is this a sort of nudge along to tell them that the Big Six and the other massive clubs around Europe don't accept it? Quite probably. But I don't think it benefits anyone in the long term.
Well, you know, the first thing, in my opinion, what we've got to look at is the clubs that have joined it. You're looking at it, the German clubs have rejected it. So, you know, your usual Champions League clubs, so your Leverkusens, your Dortmunds, your Bayerns, your Mönchengladbachs, and in France, they have as well. And you could argue maybe it's a bit of a monopoly in them divisions. You know, PSG win league most years, Bayern Munich win the Bundesliga most years. But it's actually in Italy, Spain and England where the clubs have agreed to join it, obviously with the exception of Man City in England. It makes you think, in my opinion, one thing, and that is that these clubs are sick of playing against so-called lesser teams like your Burnleys, or in Europe, you know, your Istanbul Başakşehir's for Man United, who knocked them out this season. And in my opinion, the whole point of a sport, right, is for challenge. And if these European super teams, as I might now call them, aren't up for a challenge because it doesn't benefit them financially to go up against the likes of a Burnley, why on earth are you playing a sport? Now, at the very root of it, these fans go to watch football for the spectacle of it. Not because it gets money to Avram and Joel Glazer, not because it makes money for John Henry, not because it makes money for Stan Kroenke. They go to watch the sport. And the fact that these owners are not only going to take that away from them because the Premier League have said, you know, you join, we will kick you out of the league. They're going to take it away from the average match-going fan, because I can guarantee you these games, even though it is a European Super League, they won't be played in Europe. They'll be played in the Middle East. They'll be played in the Americas. They'll be played in Asia. And it's one thing, Ed, and it is one of the G's, what Martin Tyler said. It's greed.
Definitely. You touched upon it there, but the sort of globalisation of football and this being a massive step towards it. I mean, we've seen the market for football in Asia. It's just booming. La Liga games being played in America. Like you said, the heart and soul of football is unrecognisable to what it was. I think credit, you've got to give credit to the German clubs. I think the proposal was, I think there'd be two German clubs in it, possibly three. But I think it was two. And, you know, but Germany as a culture, when it comes to football, they have the 50 plus one rule, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
And they've got it right time and time again, and they continue to do so. I also think, we slate them as a football fan, but PSG, it's coming to a point when they're saving modern football. But I genuinely think if PSG and if the German big clubs hadn't rejected this, the footballing bodies would have very little leverage and any way of really sort of stopping this plan from coming to fruition. So I think you've got to give credit to those clubs. I think it's a dark day for football, and like everything in our society now, it's coming down to money, money before lives. And football is lives for people, whether these people right at the very top understand it or not. At the end of the day, for a lot of people, it's the main thing in their life, and we need to start respecting that more.
100%. And sort of now we've sort of got our opening arguments out of the way. Let's sort of get into some of the facts of the Super League then. This is unbelievable that I'm even saying this, right? The Super League is being funded by JP Morgan, right? So American Investment Bank, who were bailed out by the taxpayer 13 years ago. They're talking about this, there's some discrepancies here, but they're talking a financial package of around £4.2 billion for the opening entrance of the Super League. It's ranging sort of, 4.2 to 4.8, but you're talking about £325 million cash stimulus for each side that joins the Super League. You're talking this is sort of 3.5 times more than UEFA pay their teams or sort of reward their teams, should I say, for making the Champions League. Now, Ed, this almost certainly points to one thing, and that's to line the pockets of the owners of these clubs.
Undoubtedly, and the thing that angers me most is that the economic climate we're in right now, these are the last clubs that need financial support. But there's nothing we can do about it, because these Americans is what we've got to put it down. Americans have definitely ruined the Premier League, and they're ruining football. They have a very different way of doing their sport over there, with the franchise system, all that, and they are trying to, well, spread this in what I see as a virus into our sport that we all love. But money talks, as we've said time and time again. But it's so the rich will get richer and the poor will get poorer. It comes to that sort of age-old adage, unfortunately, doesn't it?
It does, and you're looking at it, and there's not going to be any regulation. So in the Premier League, even with the TV rights money, that sort of, even though it's very basic trickle-down economics, there is, a cash stimulus for each team in the division. So there's a bit of fairness there, to keep clubs afloat. But in this current financial times we're living in, we're looking at a situation where clubs in the European Super League, any broadcast money will be split between the clubs and JP Morgan. Obviously, JP Morgan are funding it in the first place. There is it sort of goes beyond words the way you feel towards this, but the money that's being tossed around in modern football in the first place is absurd. Let's get this clear. By no means in condemning a European Super League are we saying everything's right with the Champions League, the Premier League, look abroad, La Liga, Serie A. But the fact that these clubs who receive hundreds of millions, in Manchester United and Real Madrid's cases, billions of pounds of revenue every year, and yet they're still doubling down on wanting more and more money. I think it's absurd. It's literally absurd. There's no reason to even break away, unless this is being used as, I mean, you might remind me of this, but I can't remember the word for it, what the Germans used in World War One, where it was such a big threat. It was just basically a threat, and this might be used as a threat to UEFA to say, you don't do what we want, we're going to do this, in terms
An
of the
ultimatum,
financial
sort of thing.
package. An ultimatum, I can't remember the word for it, but yeah, there's a phrase what comes from it. Basically, they're putting you away for a breaking point here. But I mean, have you got any final words on the probably the first part of the pod, which is the financial side of it?
It's just, it's simply obscene. You can't really say much more than that. I don't think anyone can agree with this on a moral or ethical level at all. And if you are, you know, I don't mean to, be harsh, but your morals are seriously twisted. You touched upon the sort of belief that, things aren't right in football with the Champions League and stuff, hence the reforms. I think the reforms are stupid, bringing in, 10-game group stages, because let's face it, unless you support one of the clubs in the Champions League, the group stages are boring. I don't tune into group stage thinking, wow, I can't wait to see, these games. It's when it gets to the business end of the competition that's really gets exciting. So I think the reforms are, if you isolate the reforms, they're stupid and they quite rightly need to be challenged. But the way clubs are going about challenging and the clubs that are challenging it, that's the thing that I really take a stance against. So on the financial aspect, that's sort of my final words on it. I want to ask you a question, and that is, do you think, the league will be successful? This idea of a Super League will be successful, because is it worth it?
Well, it is it's sort of it's a two-sided question. On the first side is, will it actually happen, the league? Is it just a threat? But if it does happen, which is the second the other side of the coin, no. I mean, the friend of the pod, Kieran Maguire, who's been on the pod before, he said, stop calling it a Super League, because it's not a league. It's a franchise league funded by investment banks with the focus on making financial returns for investors. There's nothing super about it in any way, shape, or form. And I'm in agreement with him, There's no sporting, there's no sporting aspect of this league whatsoever, other than the teams actually getting on the pitch. It makes no sporting sense whatsoever, does it? Because, I mean, the first part is Arsenal are ninth in the Premier League. What on earth is super about a team who is currently below Everton, West Ham, and Leicester, right? And with results going against them, could be down to 11th by Monday, right? So there's no sporting sort of morals there at all. So I don't see how on the pitch it can be a success. Now, financially, obviously, you're seeing it's a success. I'm sure the TV broadcasting numbers will be astronomical, as not as usual. There'll be billions and billions of pounds in it. So in that sense, yeah, it will be a success, in terms of making money, monetary wise. But the basic facts are, and I said it in my opening argument, in a sporting manner, in a sporting sense, it makes no sense whatsoever. No sense whatsoever.
I agree. Yeah, I agree completely there. I just want to touch upon one thing, and that's you talked there about Arsenal, ninth in the Premier League. Whenever you can create as many sub factions of leagues as you want, whilst ever there are multiple teams in the league, there will be a better side than a worse side. And all we will see now is the likes of Arsenal, Spurs, and we'll touch upon this later in terms of the legitimacy that they're staking their claim here. But all we will see is them become the laughing stocks of this Super League. And then, in the American system, the losers are winners, because in the NFL, obviously the draft picks and, first picks and all that. And I can't say it's a system I know too much about, but the fundamentals, I know. And unless there's ever going to be a system like Woe Betide, may add, in football like that, all we'll see is Arsenal, Spurs, and that lot become like the West Broms and Sheffield Uniteds this time. And I don't see why that can be attractive for front of those clubs. In terms of longevity of the league, if it was to happen, in my eyes, I think all of a sudden, the first two seasons, it might be a bit of a laugh. It would be trivial. Oh, some great clubs going up against it. We've seen it, occasionally in a season in the Champions League. Now we get to see it week in, week out. Very soon, however, the attractiveness of that will go. And all of a sudden, they'll be left with a shell of what they've created, and that's a league that's stagnating and is purely there for money. And then they'll have to make some real harsh, they'll have to see some real harsh truths about their actions. And I almost subconsciously hope it gets to that point. I really do.
I mean, you talked about the sporting legitimacy of the teams, and the teams what might may become the whipping boys of it. Spurs, Arsenal, Manchester United aren't even in the Champions League as we speak. Spurs and Arsenal didn't even qualify for the Champions League. Spurs aren't even in a European competition because they were knocked out by Dinamo Zagreb, right? So why do they have this God-given right to go off and join a European Super League? It makes no sense at all.
I agree.
And
Spurs have got two League Cups since 1991. They've only had six, Champions League, European Cup campaigns in their history, and all of a sudden, okay, fan base, yes, no one could deny they're probably a top six club on fan base. But like you said off air, look at Villa and Leeds. They've got equally as impressive fan bases, and quite rightly, they're not saying, "Oh well, we should be in it." But because Spurs are a London club, they instantly get this sense of entitlement.
100%. And we're looking at it here. And you talked about it at the start, this Americanization of football. They're taking the American financials of their franchise leagues, the NBA, the NFL, and they're using them to make themselves more money. But the actual sporting aspects of the divisions are not taking at all. You said it yourself, Ed. The losers become winners in America, and it leads to a fairer a playing field because the teams who finish bottom get first draft picks. If not, they can trade them for players. There's no fairness at all. And I tell you what, anything, right? Anything that when it gets to the point where a Secretary of State from the Conservative Party is saying that it's deeply concerning and that sustainability, integrity, and fair play of a competition is coming into disrepute, says it all, doesn't it? And I'm not going to act, right, like everything's okay in football. You'll have Gary Neville going off, right, on saying how this is disgusting. It's an absolute joke, whilst saying it behind a paywall on Sky Sports that you have to pay hundreds of pounds a year to watch. Not only is it a no to European Super League, but I think it's time for reform in football.
I completely agree. We need to seize an opportunity we've got post-COVID to, rebalance the books and make it a fairer, fairer playing field. Unfortunately, Tom, will that happen? Of course
No.
it won't. I want to talk about FSG Liverpool because, obviously on the pitch, the success they've had, credit to them, the sustainability, credit to them, but they act, they give the facade of, "Oh, you'll never walk alone," and then trademark like LA, LA, LA. They furlough staff. They don't invest in Klopp properly. The things he's done for that club and the money he's seen come in. Okay, you can talk about sustainability and all that. They're not Brentford. They're not Barnsley. You know what I mean? They're not these clubs that, if they aren't sustainable, will go under. They're one of the biggest clubs in the world, if not the biggest club in the world. So, you've got to take context into this. I think, you see FSG Out Brigade on Twitter, and the more and more that FSG do, the more and more I think they've got every right to be complaining.
Yeah, they do. And I think FSG are absolutely disgusting. Let's not get it wrong. But I think the real criminals in English football right now are the Glazers. Seriously, I don't think there's a more despicable family in English football right now. And this is a climate where we've got Roman Abramovich, an oligarch who got his funds through very, very dodgy dealings. We've got Sheikh Mansour at Man City, who does despicable things and robs people of their human rights. And then you're looking at it and you're going, the Glazers are the most morally corrupt in English football. I want to just talk about Manchester United just on their own. Firstly, the Glazers bought Manchester United in 2004 with a leverage buyout. Now, what a leverage buyout is you don't actually pump your money into the buying of the asset. You put the asset into debt. And you claim that debt back on the assets' profits over the years. And Manchester United are still in around £450 million worth of debt. Now, this is manageable debt, but Manchester United were a debt-free club since 1935 before the Glazers took them over. Manchester United were the most successful club in Europe when the Glazers took them over. And they're currently being run absolutely disgracefully. Now, moving into the modern era, you're looking at Manchester United now, and I said this to you pre-pod, Ed. Manchester United Football Club were built on the European dream. Matt Busby was the first manager to take an English side into Europe. The Busby Babes died whilst trying to win the European Cup in 1958. Matt Busby reached the pinnacle of his career when he won the European Cup in 1967. Manchester United's greatest ever moment came in Barcelona in 1999. And now you're telling me that the Glazers are going to leave the Champions League and form their own European Super League, not for the interests of the club, but for the interests of their pockets, pockets that are lined with billions of pounds that they have, robbed people of. They did the same in America. They moved their franchise, or threatened to move their franchise, till the council or sorry, the city imposed a tax on the taxpayer to pay for a stadium, which then went to lining the Glazers' pockets. I think they're absolutely disgraceful. And honestly, it goes against everything in the DNA of Manchester United, or the so-called DNA of Manchester United. You've talked about you'll never walk alone with Liverpool. You have banners at Old Trafford that say football is nothing without fans, yet they're going to go against everything every fan in Old Trafford every week would say is correct.
Yeah, I completely agree. And unfortunately, I don't want to sort of group all American owners together, but we've seen, Ipswich just been bought by Americans. American influence, whether we like it or not, without change, it's just going to keep coming and coming and coming. I know there was, an American party were interestedly reporting buying Derby County. You talked there about the franchise and the franchisement of American sports, and one thing that's always amazed me is how a team can just be moved around. Look at the Raiders in NFL. They've had about three different cities. They've been so and so Raiders. And you look at that, you think, well, how can you form any sort of identity around your club? How can you form a solid fan base? You can't. That's a simple, black and white of it. And now I'm not saying that Manchester United all of a sudden going to become Seoul United or, what I mean? I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I think we've seriously got to reconsider how much American influence, is in our beautiful game.
And we've talked about City and United, but Stan Kroenke at Arsenal as well. Not only is Stan Kroenke going to take Arsenal into a European Super League, but the man has stripped every bit of cash he can out of that football club. He sacked or slash made redundant hundreds of working class people who worked at the football club to fund the wages of Willian. The man has no morals whatsoever, and that goes for his son Josh as well. I think every football fan base has sort of, we've seen the infancy of the Liverpool and FSG out movement, but Manchester United's green and gold movement says it all. Arsenal's "We care, do you?" says it all. Looking at Spurs, there's been a lot of questions asked of Daniel Levy. I mean, let's be fair, that Amazon All or Nothing documentary was a propaganda tool for Tottenham
100%.
Hotspur. Looking abroad, Real Madrid. Let's not get it twisted here. Their Galactico era was funded by the state. So I literally there's no morals left in football if this happens. I mean, there was very few in the first place. I want to talk about what it means domestically in England, sort of soonish, Ed, but is there anything you want to say on sort of the owners?
I don't want to come across as some, I don't want to come across as sort of tribal about English football. But I in many ways, I feel that, perhaps as a supporter of Sheffield Wednesday, obviously the foreign owner in Chancery, and as a person, I've got nothing against Chancery, and I'm, but when it comes down to, does he understand, English football custom in terms of how to properly run a club in our climate? No, and why should he? Because he's from Thailand. If I went to Thailand and tried to buy a Thai football club and run it how I thought it should be run, there's probably a lot of things they do differently over there, and I would be unsuccessful. So I think then it comes down to we need people owning our football clubs who really know. Really get what English football's about. People in Spain running Spanish football clubs really know what Spanish football's about. Okay, give that club an identity that fits its surroundings. Don't give that club an identity with, imports from America and Saudi Arabia, when they're in a working class area that's for the people and they're forgetting about the people. That, for me, is the crux of the issue.
Yeah, 100%. We're looking at things as it stands, and the FA and the Premier League, and I think 8 or 9 other bodies across Europe whose teams have agreed to join the league, are saying if they do go through with it, that they will be kicked out of their divisions. Now, what do you think that would mean for English football? Because if you take Manchester United, Tottenham Hotspur, Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool, and they've not agreed to it yet, but I'd imagine under current circumstances, it'd only be a matter of weeks, Manchester City as well. What would happen to English football as we know it in your view?
I think we'd see a massive drop in the demand from overseas. But is that a bad thing financially? Probably yes. But, you know, when we're talking back to sort of reaching the promised land of the Premier League, you know, football's no longer a level playing field, you know, where the likes of Leeds could go up and in 2 seasons have won the Premier League when we went up and, you know, within a few seasons we're finishing fourth, you know, top half finishers. The Premier League's now somewhere where you go up and just try and survive. Then you maybe try and get, you know, from 12th to 15th. Then if you're lucky, you might go for a sort of 8th to 12th finish. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And what, excluding the big six clubs, what that would do with an open and the pathway for, you know, the everyday fan to experience brilliance.
Yeah.
And real good times. And that's something that excites me. Now, look, we're in pending relegations to League One, so there's a long time to go before we're anywhere near a conversation of returning to Division One. But, you know, financially, it would probably be... I think as football fans, we've become accustomed in the top two tiers to expecting to have these really good sort of foreign players and big money players. You know, when you've got players in the second division of English football on 50, 60 grand a week, yeah, there's an expectation that I believe would have to be lowered, you know, if we're being realistic here with the money coming in. But is that a bad thing? I think it would return football to its community spirit. And that's something that I feel really passionately about. So, you know, we might no longer see the influx of foreign talent on big money wages. And yeah, that would be a shame. Of course it would. But then if you're bringing that sense of community and a sense of togetherness to a club, you know, a team that gets its players, a club that gets its fans, sorry, a team that gets its fans, a club that gets its fans as a whole, I don't see that as a bad thing. And if obviously the Super League is formed, we would then see, you know, the Champions League, Europa League places. There's a third competition, I'm pretty sure, coming in, isn't there?
Yeah,
which
there
I
is.
Think's just, you know, an unneeded filler and congester, in my opinion. But that's another conversation. But what it does, that, you know, what it then does is it, you know, sends, like, give yourself Barnsley, okay? You know, they're on the brink, perhaps, of getting into the Premier League. There's a lot of circumstances that would need to go their way,
yeah,
but it's definitely not unattainable. They get in the Premier League, and all of a sudden, the top six have gone, okay? Ta-ra. You then look at who would win the Premier League. So you probably have your Leicesters in the conversation.
Yeah.
I think your Villas, your Leeds, they'd all of a sudden make a real push for it. Mm. And rightly so. Fair play to them. But if you're saying going right down to 7th, 8th, you know, permitting on who wins FA Cup and all that sort of stuff, you're genuinely thinking in your first season, hang on a minute, we could be playing in Europe in a year's time.
Yeah.
And that, for fans, you know, it's brilliant. It's excitement. And I think we need that to be re-injected into our footballing system. So personally, I am of the belief that if the top six clubs want to go, let them go. I'm also of the firm belief that the grass is not always greener, and they will realise that soon enough. And when they come back, we say, OK, well, you know, you're going to have to start right at the very bottom, Sunday League level, OK, pretty much. Glorified Sunday League level. You're going to be playing hashtag United, all right? You know, Spencer FC, he's no mug. He's no pushover, hashtag United.
Uncle Spenny will beat there. You.
He will. So, you know, and it will send a huge message out. Now, you know, let's face it, money talks. They'd probably buy their way back in if it didn't go well.
Yeah.
And the whole thing would just be an expensive experiment that went wrong and undermined the whole morals of our society. But, you know, apart from that, let them go.
Yeah, like, well, my first point, or whatever many point of the pod, but the first point in this issue is I'm not a Luddite when it comes to football. I don't reject innovation or something new to change the sport. I'm probably one of the very few people who think VAR is a good thing. Now, that's a completely different topic, but I'm in agreement with you, Ed. You know, you do this, and you might open up a brand new era of English football. And you're right in the sense that, yeah, it might be a bit of a fixture congestion issue, but bloody hell, I'd love to watch Barnsley play Batty Borisov. You know what I mean? Do you imagine how
Yeah,
cool it would be, right?
I completely agree.
If our clubs, if we could watch our clubs in Europe, it's something that a very privileged few can see, and it would be something absolutely sensational, I've got to say. But you're right in the sense that English football would change maybe for the better if these big six clubs leave, because they're not a top six. Now, Arsenal aren't a good team, they're the big six. And we might be looking at a situation where English football harks back to the 1980s of hoofball and Everton being league champions and Leeds United being one of the biggest clubs in the country. But I think it may be the step back that we need. And you know what? If you offered me this and say the big six clubs are going to leave, but you're going to get a situation in English football what you probably had 15 years ago, where the Premier League was on the verge of bursting into this huge, only money driven, sort of league, rather than the league what had a fair amount of sporting integrity in it before Abramovich and Co. And the Glazers turned up. I would take that trade. Don't honestly, I would take that trade because there was a time where I'm looking at it here. Ipswich Town beat us in the playoff final in 2000, were in Europe the season after. Sunderland promoted in 2000, were in Europe the season after. Reading in 2007 finished like seventh in the Premiership. So I think it's something that needs to be looked at. If these clubs are kicked out of our divisions, that's when you look at it and you go, right, this is when we really do strive for change in our sport. And I'd love to see a situation where, your Matthew Benthams, your Paul Conways, looking at the Premier League, maybe, what's the Leeds owner called? Radrizzani,
Yeah.
sort of at the forefront of this change and not set you to say this is how we change football. That's just my opinion personally, but I think there is positives for fans of clubs like Barnsley and Sheffield Wednesday if these clubs leave, but it asks a bigger question of football. And would we see, within the few years of it, Everton, Leicester, Villa dominating English football, West Ham, who then go, right, we're off. So
Yeah.
it begs that question.
Yeah, I mean, I think the proposals are a 20-man league, 15 dead certs, and five, interchangeable depending on league performance. As a concept, you need, I think if this was to be fully sort of Hyundai A League, you know what I mean, in terms of no relegation, MLS, no relegation or promotion, I think, then that would be just completely undemocratic, and all sporting integrity would be lost. I think the five interchangeables give it, a little bit more integrity, but only a very little bit, because you've got to ask yourself, if you're not guaranteed to be in this league, and like the FA are threatening to expel you from their league, are you going to take that risk? We don't know the legal side to this. Will it be the sort of thing where they'll blacklist the six main clubs, and if you're one of the interchangeable ones, you won't be blacklisted? We don't know. That's simply information we don't have at our disposal right now. But we can only infer and make our judgments. And, would a Leicester or, I don't know, a West Ham on current form, would they actually be like, would they want to join a league where they're going to get spanked every week, let's face it, because they're against the world's elite football clubs, rather than stay in a league where they're winning, they're going to get Champions League football, they're going to get Europa League football, where they finish, they're going to be competing and winning the FA Cup, League Cup, they're going to like that new taste of success, undoubtedly. And so, I think it'll be a real interesting conversation. I think it's also worth, though, just reminding ourselves that this is massively, I think unlikely that the Super League will take place right now. I think, unfortunately, there will be a day in the future where there is that break, you know, Premier League-esque, you know, the formation of that, where there'll be a big milestone, big change. And then I'm sure in 30 years' time after that, we'll be sitting down and the same conversations will be had.
Yeah.
It's sort of the cyclical cycle. I think change is needed, though, but completely not in the way that it's been done. But as I said, from a personal point of view, it's sort of a screw 'em attitude. Let them go.
Yeah, and you say it's unlikely it'll happen. We'll see. We'll see. But I'd like to think that maybe this will see a shift or a spin of the Overton window in football now, where we look at it and we go, this power that's held by us, by these American overlords on English football, certainly has to be stopped. And you mentioned it earlier on in the podcast. I would love, and maybe it's the little socialist in me, but I would love the 50 plus one rule to come into English football,
I completely agree.
because
I completely agree.
how many times, not even just at Premiership level, but at League One, League Two level, have we seen owners come into football clubs that have no regard for the history, no regard for the fans, and literally kill clubs or nearly kill clubs? I mean, literally, clubs have been killed in the last few years. Bury were killed
Steve
by
Dale, yeah.
Steve Dale, an ignorant owner. And with a 50 plus one rule, Steve Dale never even gets to buy Bury. Now, Stanley Choi never even gets to buy Wigan Athletic. So it's some.
Eric Alonso as well. I really think that that's going to end in big
Yeah.
tears. I think there's kind of, even just like, I don't know, Vincent Tan changing the kit to red, just blatant disregard of any sort of culture around the club. You know, they're in a sound financial position, but just little things like that, it really frustrates me. And, you know, I can't think, I'm genuinely trying to wrap my brains here. If you could tell me of one American investment group, owner, whatever you want to call it, you know, the variation that's been successful. Because, you know, Swansea,
Yeah.
failure. You know, Ipswich, they're selling the dream.
Maybe
But, you know,
Barnsley, but
let's
you could
see.
argue it's more of a European model than an American one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Undoubtedly, it's more of a European model. But, you know, I think the lesson here is don't let Americans interfere with your
Yeah.
club. I mean, don't let Americans interfere with a lot of things in life, to be completely honest. Because their sense of entitlement. I mean, that comes on to the whole cultural issue I have with the country.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, one thing I want to talk about is it's obviously the six clubs we've gone over them. Man United, you can't deny they deserve a place
Yeah,
if there's going to be
yeah, yeah.
six. Same with City, Chelsea, Liverpool. You know, those four are dead certs because they are the top four clubs in English football. However, they've come about that, cough, cough, City and Chelsea with money. You know, we can't
Yeah,
sort of deny
yeah.
that. My real issue is with Spurs and Arsenal. Arsenal, aside from, you know, the biggest from London, undoubtedly, on history and stuff, but the way they are as a club, we've got to look at the here and now, and they are not nowhere near a top six club,
Yeah.
and they haven't been for some seasons, in my
Yeah.
opinion. Spurs, you know, they're the biggest myth in English football, how they're a top six club. Like I said, two League Cups from like since 1991, six Champions League campaigns in their, you know, whole existence. You know, it. And I don't know how that gets solved because you can't change society's view and football's view of those clubs. That's the issue,
No, you
can you?
can't. Yeah, I think you made a good point about your problem with American culture, but yeah, you know what? I'm willing to get into that. And you know, in my opinion, you look at I watched a documentary recently, an Adam Curtis documentary, Can't Get You Out of My Head, and he talked about the shift that went on from when the power of the people was passed from the people by our governments to the banks. And if this happens, it probably happened years ago without our knowledge, but this would be the shift of power from the fans to the banks. And it would be, unless there was a failure of the European League, Super League, there would be no way to bring it back, in my opinion. You know, you are literally handing over unprecedented power to JP Morgan over the sporting division.
Yeah, and then you know if things go terribly wrong and those six clubs find themselves in circumstances no one ever imagined, well then the whole reset of football has to take
Yeah.
place. You know we're in different positions, obviously. Championship supporting clubs probably not for long, but you know
Yeah.
where our expectations from our clubs is far different, and we can only dream of being in the Premier League, never mind a top six position. But and there's a real cynicism in myself actually right now, because you know I'm fed up of the power grab by the top six clubs and their sense of their self-righteousness and the deprecation that they place upon other clubs that are equally as deserving of where they are. And you know, I would love nothing more than this to go tits up, to be completely honest, in their faces. And you know, undoubtedly that'll probably have massive knock-on effects for Wednesday, Barnsley, and the clubs, the proper clubs in my eyes. But yeah, you know, it's just accentuated all the feelings already held in football, all the sort of groans and moans about who has the power and who's buying the clubs. This has only accentuated it. I think for me, the biggest insult of them all is the timing. You know, we're in a massive economic crisis where, like I said, FSG, you know, our furloughed staff, you know, Gunnosaurus was made redundant. You know, he's Arsenal. He's the figurehead of the club. And yet these multi-millionaires, billionaires will still be lining their back pockets. And yeah, it's just an insult to everyone, to you know, all the sort of, I guess you call them normal people, all the normal everyday fans who work hard for their money, who, you know, football's a release for them. But football, whilst ever it's becoming commercialised, it's becoming less and less of a release, because going to games, the matchday experience is not becoming fun anymore. You know, regardless of what happens on the pitch, the matchday experience, it's full of, you know, and it's full of tourists, you know, coming for the occasion. Not necessarily Sheffield Wednesday and Barnsley, let me
No
just point that
tourists
out.
coming to the
I
West
do want to bet the
Stand.
club. No, but you know, when you look at the Premier League
Selfie
games and
sticks.
everyone's got the selfie sticks, yeah, you know what I mean? And it's like, this isn't football. And you know, you can't even call me old fashioned because I've grown up in this era. But you know what I mean? And you know, simple things like goal celebrations. You look at the limbs back in the 90s and the early noughties. You look at them now, they're
They're shite,
incomparable.
aren't they?
And yeah, and you know, then you look down at non-league and lower league football, and you see the same spirit that you saw decades ago in the Premier League and the old Division One, and you think there's no way modern football can get back to what we see. You know, there's a time difference between the Premier League and the rest of English football. The Championship is slowly becoming more and more Premier League-esque, but League One, League Two, you know, still for me hold the fundamental English core values when it comes to football. And commercialisation is great for the pockets of clubs, great for the brand, but awful for the football.
And you know, I talked about running the clock back on English football. I'd say the Championship now is where the Premiership was 10 years ago, and maybe not financial transfer fees wise, but you're talking now of Championship players commanding fees of, you know, in the 30s, some 20s, 30s, millions of pounds. And you're right, there is a certain amount of soul that's been lost in English football, and I think it's about time we change something, and this would be the perfect time. I mean, we had Kieran Maguire on, and we asked him even before these plans were announced, do you see anything changing? And he said no, but it has to, we have to wait and see, don't we?
Definitely.
Well, that was an incredibly interesting 45 minutes, I'd say.
Yeah, I've got nothing more to
It's
say. I think I've probably got a lot off my chest that's been built up over years of supporting Wednesday and just seeing football change, even in that sort of microcosm of a period that, you know, because you know, let's face it, we can only sort of remember sort of, you know, 12 years of football really. And so, you know, we've only seen a substrata, you know, a small period of the game. And when you think back to how it's changed in that period, you know, it's incomprehensible. And so I think we've got a lot of the sort of, yeah, a lot of the things off our chest there where it's thing for me is it's deeper than the European Super League. It's about that issue of power. And then the everyday fan. And this, like I said, it's just highlighted and accentuated, I guess.
Definitely. As usual, We'd love it if you dropped a like on the video and subscribed. If you're listening on Apple, please do A, subscribe, and B, give us a review. We'll give you a shout out, by the way, if you give us a 5-star review, so there's your incentive. If you're on Spotify, please do follow us, and we've got some really exciting content coming up over the coming weeks and months, so please do stick around for that. Thanks for listening.